This podcast series is brought to you by the Upcycled Food Association, building a food system in which all food reaches its highest and best use. To learn more about becoming a member or to support the UFA by making a charitable donation, visit upcycledfood.org. Look for the Upcycled Product Certification launching this year. And thanks to our sponsor, Net Zero, a food upcycler that uses proprietary technology to recover and reharvest food byproducts into safe, nutritious, upcycled ingredients that are good for the planet and consumers. You can find out more at netzero.us, powering Earth's food forward.
We found that 78% of customers would rather have an upcycled product compared to a conventional product, if it was available. So that's a really powerful message to send to our category managers who are making those decisions around what products get onto the shelf.
Too good to waste.
Too good to waste.
Way too good to waste.
Too good to waste, absolutely.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast series, Too Good to Waste. I'm your host, Kevin May, and together we're going on an adventure to explore some of the fun and creative and innovative ways that lots of people are doing their part to help find a higher value in unused food and food byproducts that might otherwise be wasted. So thanks for joining me. Let's go see if we can find out about some of these things that are too good to waste. So what if you could provide over 9 million meals just by rescuing food from grocery stores before it goes to waste? And on top of that, how about setting a goal of sending zero food waste to landfill by 2025? Well, one large company in New Zealand is doing just that, and many of their stores are already 85% of the way to that goal. So we're going to learn a lot more about how that company does that and what some of their goals are and how they got there in the first place. But first of all, I want to welcome you to the very first international episode of the Too Good to Waste podcast series. So for the very first stop on this international journey, we travel to New Zealand, albeit virtual, of course, in this time of COVID right now, but certainly looking forward to getting there in person. But that's where I meet Francesca Goodman-Smith. She is the Waste Minimization Manager for Foodstuffs, one of the largest group of supermarkets in New Zealand. She's responsible for leading Foodstuffs' National Waste Minimization Program, and in that role, she works with a variety of stakeholders across the sector as she proactively identifies opportunities that enable positive social, environmental, and financial outcomes from waste minimization. Now, in addition to that, Francesca also co-chaired the Upcycled Foods Standards Committee. And if you heard the most recent What's Up segment, you may have heard that the Upcycled Certification Standard has now officially been adopted. So lots of great things to talk about, including getting a global view on food waste reduction and upcycling from the perspective of someone who is very passionately involved in that in New Zealand. Francesca, it is a real pleasure to welcome you to this episode.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today.
Well, and thank you, too. It's been kind of a fun logistical exercise to coordinate a 19-hour time zone difference. So you're calling in from New Zealand, which is fantastic because you are our first international guest on the Too Good to Waste podcast series. So I'm so thrilled to start expanding this and taking it globally. And, you know, to kick this off, what I'd be interested in is, can you tell us a little bit about what got you interested in food waste reduction and the food upcycling movement there in New Zealand?
So my interest in food waste really started when I was having a stint professionally dumpster diving. So for my master's, I weighed and measured food waste in supermarkets, which involved getting into skips, separating out all the different waste streams, food from non-food, looking at all of the other waste streams that went out the back of a store. For example, food that went to food rescue organisations, food that went to animal feed, food that went to compost, and quantifying all of that to figure out a good picture of what supermarkets were doing.
Did you ever have a moment when you were doing that where you started questioning, why am I doing this?
Absolutely. Sitting there in a stinky old skip in a boiler suit with gloves on and looking at some of the food there, you know, it really opened my eyes to the scale of food waste. But it also really showed me that supermarkets were very dedicated to doing the right thing with their food waste. We found that only about 23% of all of supermarket level food waste actually went to the landfill, and supermarkets were doing a really good job of diverting that food waste to better, higher value uses further up the food waste hierarchy, which I'm sure many of your guests have referred to before, where you start at the top with the best possible thing being reducing food waste and then making sure it goes to people, then animals, then followed by a composting, and then lastly at the bottom, going to landfill.
Well, and so what's fascinating about that is already it sounds like the approach that is being taken in New Zealand and with foodstuffs is a lot farther along than what we're doing here in the U.S. I mean, how long ago was it that they started this awareness? Or, I mean, has this been something they've been doing all along, or is this just fairly new in the last several years?
So foodstuffs began looking into waste and including food waste in about 2012. Mm-hmm. So they appointed a sustainability manager then to do a big overhaul of all of their systems. And they did audits in the stores to find out how much was going to landfill, how much was going to other destinations. And it was sitting about 64% was being diverted. Now that the program's been running all of those years, we're up around 85% diversion from landfill. Even some stores are up around 96%. So only 4% of their total waste is going to landfill. It's an amazing result. And it shows what you can do when you start measuring things and reporting on it, which is what we're very dedicated to doing. We also have set targets, and I think that has really, really driven the progress that we've seen. So we have a target to send zero food waste to landfill by 2025, and we're tracking and measuring against that to make sure that we are achieving it.
That's a terrific target, and it's not that far off. But like you said, having started this back in 2012, it sounds like you're quite a ways along the way, you know, down the road with this. And I'm predicting you will most definitely hit that target. So with what you're doing, so when you were going through and doing this master's program and doing your dumpster diving, when was that and what were you hoping to get out of that research or the work that you were doing at that particular time?
So it was in 2017 when I was doing the research and touring around the country and measuring food waste in all of the stores. From there, we were trying to create a national baseline for food waste across different parts of the food supply chain. And my responsibility was at the retail level. But the University of Otago, in conjunction with our representative body for waste in New Zealand called Wastemans, have been working together on a national waste prevention program where they quantify food waste at every stage. So we're building up that evidence and that data and that baseline. And my interest in the supermarket space really blossomed from having that experience in store, talking to the staff, seeing the opportunities that they identified to reduce food waste and how much they were dedicated to donating and to providing food to animal feed and to refining their processes. So when a role came up to actually manage the waste minimization program for foodstuffs, I jumped at that because it was a real opportunity to translate my research into practical change with a really overarching remit across the whole country to drive that behavior to reduce food waste.
Yeah, that sounds like, a unique opportunity that you set up for yourself and working with a company that truly embraces it. So it gives you even a hope for this opportunity to really make change with what you're doing. So now that you're on with Foodstuffs as the waste minimization manager, and you talked about the goal, the 2025 goal of no food going into landfills or 100% being diverted away from landfills, and with the highest use being human consumption, what are some of the things that you've been able to do to move it in that direction?
there's been a few fundamental shifts over the last sort of 5 or 6 years around food waste management in New Zealand. One was the introduction of a Good Samaritan clause to our Food Act, which meant we could really drive food donation. So the Good Samaritan clause outlines that any food donor is, if they deem that food safe for consumption at the point of donation, then they're exempt from any liability from that food at the point that they pass that along. So it gave supermarkets a lot more confidence to be able to donate food and not worry about the health and safety repercussions that might come back from that, while bearing in mind that that food must be safe. We've also seen a massive uplift in the amount of food rescue organisations across New Zealand. The first one starting back in 2008, I think, and now we have about 17 organisations across the country rescuing food, not only from supermarkets, but also from the hospitality sector and from events and other parts of the food supply chain as well. So there's been quite a groundswell there, and we've seen our food rescue numbers go up dramatically. When I started at Foodstuffs, we were sitting about 5 million meals per year were being donated through our food rescue program. Now we're up around 9 million meals per year that are being donated to the community. So that's a great result, but not everything can be donated. Not everything's ready for consumption in the form that it is. And that's where my journey into upcycled food really began, because there's this huge potential and opportunity with food that might not be beautiful in appearance, and it might not be, it might need some further processing to turn it into something nutritious and edible. But that's where the concept of upcycling really comes into its own and provides supermarkets, but also other parts of the food supply chain, with avenues to divert their food into higher value uses.
So now that you're getting into this journey of upcycling, is this a new concept? I mean, I'm thinking there are some products in New Zealand, I think, in Australia, that actually have been an example of upcycling for a long time, whether or not you actually called it that. But what is the awareness like, and what are you finding the opportunities to be once you start on this journey?
Yes, so we have a great example of pioneering upcycling in New Zealand, actually. One of our national treasure foods, which is called Marmite, it's a yeasty breakfast spread, and that is actually made from upcycling yeast from the beer making process and turning that into the spread. But nobody really labeled it as upcycling before. It was just, there was a source of ingredient and there was an output product, and that's just what it was. But now, as there's increasing awareness about food waste and about creating new innovative products, I think that's driving a bit of momentum around that word upcycling. So yes, I think it's a timing thing as well. Mm-hmm. It's not that the concept of upcycling necessarily is new, but that momentum around it is really growing. And I think the Upcycled Food Association in the US is really responsible for growing that momentum and driving that change, not only in the US, but around the rest of the world as well. The word upcycling is being used, and I guess I can talk about some various instances that we've actually tested that here in New Zealand.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because I know from your background that you've been involved in some research, and tell us what you have found out so far, because it's always the big question is, when you have something, and you give a great example with the Marmite, and I assume, is that similar or the same as Vegemite in Australia?
It is.
Yep, I've had it when I was in Australia. Definitely tried it. It's definitely an interesting product, and maybe, I'd say it's a bit of an acquired taste. But if you go to Australia or to New Zealand, by all means, you have to try it. And actually, I think it's available here in the U.S. as well for anybody who is really curious about it. But now we talk about, these products that essentially were upcycled before anybody really knew what upcycling was. But now we're getting to a point where upcycling is more of an accepted term, and it's gaining momentum, as you say. However, in the research that you're doing, is this some of what you've been doing studies on there in New Zealand? And if so, what are you learning about the consumer's awareness of upcycling food at this stage?
Yeah, absolutely. So what happened, sort of why upcycling came onto my radar, was a few companies started approaching us saying, you've got these valuable waste streams. For example, deli meat that is currently, it hasn't got any value and it's not used for anything interesting. And we can turn that into a premium pet food by this process called upcycling. And I thought that was a fantastic idea, you know, using something that goes to low value uses. It might be ground down into a fine powder and used on gardens, or it might be used in commercial animal feed. But if we can turn something into a really interesting, innovative, creative product that can actually obtain some additional value by being sold on supermarket shelves, then that's fantastic. But my main question was, are customers ready for this? Do they know what upcycled foods are? Do they trust the word upcycled?
Right.
And do they know what it means? So in August 2020, we commissioned a study to figure out how much New Zealand consumers knew about upcycled foods. So our very first question was, had they heard of upcycled foods before? And only 10% of our 1,001 person sample size had heard of upcycled foods.
Wow.
Yeah, so the awareness was relatively low. This was in August 2020. And we asked a suite of questions about what interested them about upcycled foods, once we'd then explained the concept to them, if they'd be likely to purchase upcycled foods, what the barriers might be to them actually following through with a purchase, how appealing it would be compared to a conventional product. And then we did a follow-up study that actually only took place about 2 weeks ago, where we went into supermarkets with an upcycled food product and we allowed customers to taste that and then asked them a series of questions. And so from that, we found that awareness of upcycled foods had actually increased to 43% of people that we surveyed from that initial 10%.
That's amazing. So, yeah, that's a huge increase in a relatively short period of time.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I was thinking before, what could be some of these reasons that people are becoming more aware of upcycled foods? One was, we've got a few products on the supermarket shelves now that are upcycled, and maybe people are seeing those more and more. We've got the product that we were actually testing in stores was a craft beer product made out of surplus bread from supermarkets. So that's turned into craft beer. Then we've got some pet foods as well, made from meat waste that's then upcycled. And then we've also got snack foods, crackers and things made from spent grain. So it could be that consumers are seeing these products more on the shelf, but I think it's also the media attention around upcycled foods has really grown. And some of those big organizations like Whole Food Markets predicting upcycled foods in their top 10 food trends for 2021. Even here in New Zealand, Newsroom, one of our media agencies, put out a report predicting upcycled foods as the number one food trend for New Zealand for 2021.
Wow, well, that's very exciting. And what I love is seeing how the news outlets there in New Zealand, as you mentioned, are really embracing this and putting the message out, which is absolutely what's needed to continue the momentum and to grow this this awareness of food upcycling. So I wanted to check in with you on something else, which is another hot topic right now, of course, which is the impacts of COVID on the food supply chain. And I'm just curious how it's working in New Zealand. Do you all rely on much imported food and food products, or is most of what you grow and produce done so locally? And if so, is that possibly having an impact on the acceptance and awareness of food upcycling as a way to keep food in the local food supply chain?
Yes, I think buying local and supporting local has definitely been a message throughout COVID that has really resonated and endured after lockdowns and things. People are very keen to support small New Zealand companies. We're very fortunate here in New Zealand. We are a large food producing nation and we are able to be pretty self-sufficient with our food supply. And the messaging that continuously went out during COVID was, do not panic. We have enough food to go around. It's just a logistical challenge of getting it to the right places. And they're probably, you know, it also provided an avenue for New Zealand food companies to pitch their products, their new products, into the supermarkets as well, just with that increased airtime around Buy New Zealand Made. One of the questions we actually asked consumers in that survey that we did in store recently was what aspect of craft beer actually appealed to them the most? What drove them to make that purchasing decision of the specific craft beer that they chose? And we had New Zealand Made on, or buying local in New Zealand Made, on that list, and it ranked as number three in terms of that driver. People did really feel connected to the fact that the product was made locally.
Yeah, that's neat. And then, so the beer was made from bread. Is that correct? Is that what they were doing?
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's correct.
I was going to ask you, have they gotten into, you talked about, I think, some pet treats or pet food made with, or some snacks or crackers or something made with a spent grain. That's kind of the other end of the brewing process. Is that also something that is popular or gaining some popularity in New Zealand as well?
Yes. So this company, they're called Citizen Collective.
Okay.
And they take surplus bread, turn that into craft beer, then turn the spent grain from that beer making process into a spent grain flour that is made into artisan bread. So they've got a full loop solution.
That's fantastic.
We've got some other companies who approach local craft breweries and take their spent grain and turn it into a whole range of different snack foods, bars and crackers and all of those sorts of things. That's definitely gaining some momentum as well.
Yeah, I love it. It sounds like you all are very forward in the whole idea of upcycling, and it's great to hear that more and more consumers are becoming aware of it. So that leads us into kind of the next question in this, you know, in the upcycling food movement, if you will, which is, what does it take to get these products, or get more of these products, into the stores? And so in your role as a waste minimization manager, you're looking at not only minimizing waste, but are you also looking at what can we do with the products that are created with the food that's being diverted from the landfills? How can we get that back into the food supply chain, and in particular, get it back into the stores?
Yes, absolutely. I think the key thing that has really driven this interest that Foodstuffs has in upcycled food is the fact that we can be part of that supply chain and part of that journey. So the products that we have seen be so successful are ones that actually rescue food from supermarkets to turn back into food, because that gets buy-in from staff at all sorts of levels of the organization. You're in the deli, you're putting that deli meat aside for a company to come and collect it and turn it into this product that you can walk down the aisle and see on the shelf, and you know that you're part of that. So I think that has really driven this positive attitude around upcycling within Foodstuffs. We've also got a lot of, I guess it's that tension between customers and the retailer, and customers demanding products and retailers supplying those products. And if we can work together to demonstrate that customers do really want these products, then the retailer will respond. So that was sort of some of the logic behind doing these surveys and doing this research and collaborating with New Zealand companies who are upcycling different foods, is to demonstrate the consumer desire in quantitative terms, saying, 43% of our customers have actually heard of this thing before. And furthermore, we found that 78% of customers would rather have an upcycled product compared to a conventional product if it was available. So that's a really powerful message to send to our category managers who are making those decisions around what products get onto the shelf.
So speaking of that, how does it actually work with Foodstuffs in the different stores under that brand? Is it a store by store decision, or does it come from a higher level, like a distribution level that would go throughout all stores?
We've got quite an interesting model at Foodstuffs. So every store is individually owned and operated, but they fit under the Foodstuffs umbrella, and there's different brands of supermarket that sit under that umbrella. So in order for a product to be sold on our shelves, it needs to be pitched through to our team of category managers, mm-hmm. and they make the decision whether that product is ranged or not. If they say, yes, we want this product available, then store managers and store owners and store buyers can then go ahead and purchase that product to go on their supermarket shelf. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's available at every store, or that all of the stores will then buy that product. It's down to the supplier to then pitch it in to the individual stores. We do have something called our core range, which is products that are available in every single store across the country, but that's usually bigger companies, not necessarily those playing in that upcycled food kind of new product creative startup space. So it's more likely that a supplier will go through our process of being approved as a vendor, and then they can go ahead and approach individual stores, which works quite well, because especially if the company is sourcing their product locally, it's got that really nice local story, and our owner operators live in that local community as well. And so you're already building up that relationship and that story and that context, then everybody can get behind, and makes it much easier to communicate the value of that product to customers as well.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, I'm so fascinated with what you all are doing in New Zealand, because it sounds like you've somewhat cracked the code on what it takes is really getting all the different stakeholders together and understanding what the problem is, what the solutions are, and how to make that all come together within the store, from products coming in to potentially food waste going out that is now no longer waste, and then can it get back into the food supply chain and they bring it back in. So great job. I love seeing what you all are doing. And one of the things that I was curious about too, which I know you had done some research on this as well, is what about product placement in the stores? I believe you did some research work on what consumers are interested in, whether it's its own category or section of the store or mixed in. What did you find out?
Yeah, absolutely. So we asked customers whether they would like to see upcycled foods have its own area in the store, or whether they'd like it just placed within the existing categories. And so what we found is that customers really just want to see it widespread and diffused within their whole supermarket. They don't want to go to a specific section. They actually want to go to the craft beer section, see all of the options, and then have the upcycled product pop out on the shelf there for them, and then go to their pet food section and look at all the different pet foods and see their upcycled product there. So a bit different to how we see things like gluten-free or different dietary requirements. Mm-hmm. People tend to want those in a segregated area of the supermarket. But I think this really shows that people see upcycled foods as a way to actually transition their purchasing behavior to more conscious behavior across everything they buy. Mm-hmm. And so eventually, you know, in an ideal world, we would have upcycled foods available across every product category, and somebody could do their shop and they could only buy upcycled foods.
Yeah, that's such a great goal. And I think it is becoming more and more possible as more products are developed. So I definitely see that coming. And what I'm wondering, as far as New Zealand goes, what kind of support is there for someone who may want to get into creating and developing new upcycled food products?
Yeah, so upcycled foods are very new in New mm-hmm. Zealand. The University of Otago is our sort of our hub for food waste research and consumer food research in New Zealand. And they are currently setting up an upcycled food lab. So they're wanting to help companies actually do some of that product development, that consumer research, trialing different recipes and different technologies for processing waste products into new food products in a safe environment as well, that allows them to test on a small scale without having to invest a huge amount of capital. We've also got entities such as the Food Bowl, which is a commercialization facility for new products, not necessarily just upcycled foods, but any new food products coming to market. They can work within Food Bowl's environment to actually test their scalability, their recipe development, their processing. And we know upcycled food companies have used their facilities before to do that.
Do you, you may or may not know this, but I mean, do you know, have any insight into what is available for funding for, you know, to kind of support the upcycled food product development, whether it's private or it's state funding or anything like that through grants? Is there anything being done like that in New Zealand right now?
Foodstuffs actually itself run a kind of grant system competition called Food Starter, where new companies can pitch their idea in, and then they actually receive support and resourcing to get their product from development stage onto the shelf and all of that sort of wraparound support. Not necessarily tailored towards upcycled foods, but I know that upcycled food companies have applied for Food Starter before. There's also, I think, you know, we haven't got a specific carve out for funding for upcycled foods, and that could be really instrumental in actually driving some positive change in this area and getting new food products coming through and available to then be sold in the supermarkets. We've just had some recent changes in New Zealand around our waste legislation, and our waste levy is getting increased. So that means that the funding pool from that to go into things like solutions to food waste is growing. So I think that we will see more of that funding actually being used to drive trends like upcycled foods.
That all sounds so encouraging. And it's just like you mentioned, even Food Starter, that you make a really good point that even if it's there's a program there, whether it's may not be specific for upcycling, developing upcycled products, but if you're developing a product and it just happens to be upcycled, why not go into something like that? So it sounds like the programs that are available, whether through foodstuffs or other grant type programs, and like you said, through the levy, you know, the money that's being collected from the waste levies, everything's moving in the right direction, it sounds like. And the more, so the key, as we always talk about, is awareness. The more the awareness grows around this and around the benefits of the of upcycled food products and food ingredients, I think we hopefully will see more here in the US and New Zealand and in other countries. So speaking of awareness, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your role as a co-chair on the Upcycled Food Standards Committee. How did you get involved in that, and what was that experience like for you?
Yes, so we talked a little bit about COVID earlier.
Yep.
And COVID created, you know, there was a silver lining to COVID was that it definitely broke down some of those barriers that people were acting in their silos within their own country and opened up our ability to communicate internationally and use Zoom and use different Google Hangouts and things like that to actually come together. So I tuned into a webinar that Turner Wyatt, the CEO of Upcycled Food Association, was running in conjunction with the Bioresource Processing Alliance here in New Zealand. And I was just fascinated by the amount that the Upcycled Food Association had achieved in their very short time of being formed. They'd already gone through the definition-making process. They'd collaborated with academics, with industry, with policymakers, and really rallied all of these different people who are such important actors across the food supply chain around food waste reduction and built such momentum. And so when Turner mentioned that they were about to embark on this process of designing a certification and looking for people to be involved in the committee, I thought, wow, that sounds like such a fantastic thing to be part of. So I put an application in and then was successful and was fortunate enough to be selected as a co-chair. So that just was an absolutely phenomenal process to be part of, and I would say absolutely a career highlight for me. It was amazing to meet all of those people who are experts in their field across the food supply chain, from on farm all the way through to those who understand the consumer and how they're going to perceive a certification, and every bit in the middle. And the process was just so well coordinated, and the momentum was kept because we were working towards this quite tight deadline to have the certification launched. So we really all rallied together to get that over the line.
That sounds so amazing. I mean, really almost like a masterclass, if you will. And then through this process, were there things that came out of this that you feel are applicable no matter where you are, say in New Zealand, for instance, to the things that are going on there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the way, so Ben Gray, he's been on one of your episodes earlier. He coordinated the whole process and just managed that so extremely well, bringing out everybody's individual perspective and allowing us to have some of those really robust and challenging conversations, especially at the outset, where we debated, you know, which metric do we actually choose to be the basis of the certification? What are we going to ask people to be able to demonstrate in order to be able to get the certification? And what does that mean for the consumer? And how feasible is that for the food producer? And then how feasible is that for the ingredient supplier? And having to think with all those different hats on. And I think because the Upcycled Food Association had put together such a extensive and varied committee to work on that, we were able to work through all of those considerations and have all of those varied opinions represented.
So I can only imagine, like you said, some of the very spirited debates and conversations going on, which I think is such a wonderful part of the process. And you're right, I talked to Ben Gray in the past, and I just know how he runs things. So I'm sure it was a very, you know, powerful and meaningful process that you all went through. And now that the certification standard has actually officially been adopted, what do you think of it? How do you feel?
I think, you know, we ran such a consultative process that we had two rounds of public consultation. We had member consultation. We really took on board all of that feedback that people had, and everyone had the opportunity to have a say. And I think that's why we landed on something that was so successful, because we were able to incorporate that all along the journey. And, you know, that's demonstrated by us unanimously adopting that certification and feeling really confident to put our names behind that and pitch that up to the Upcycled Food Association board. So I think all of that work to make sure that people's views had been heard and considered throughout the process, whether they be the public, whether they be members, whether they be the committee, that really ensured the success. And now seeing it live and out there and hearing people talk about the certification, it's really satisfying to watch that grow. And, you know, it's not static. It's not one of those certifications that's now done and just going to sit there and be administered. It is going to constantly evolve and grow with the sector. And as things change, it will be dynamic and it will change in response. And I think that's one of the things. You're never going to have anything that's perfect and can just stay the way it is. I think it's about constantly being aware of the environment that you're operating within and changes to the sector and different interests that are coming out and growing with that.
Well, and what you learned and got out of that, I can only imagine, is are you able to take some of that and apply it to, if you're going to be doing, let's just say, some additional research and surveys or anything in New Zealand, do you think that would be beneficial for you down, you know, in New Zealand?
Yes, definitely. I think, you know, one of the great things that being part of the UFA family has really done for me has been growing that network of that brains trust, really, globally, to learn from. And I've been doing research in conjunction with colleagues at Drexel University who were involved in that definition task force. And now we're co-developing different surveys to do here in New Zealand, and those findings will then go back to, you know, go international again. So we're really doing, you know, it's very much a collaborative area. And I think, you know, around upcycled foods, there is that sense of collaboration, ideas sharing, everybody wanting this to succeed, and everybody being behind the reason that upcycled foods exist. You know, everybody knows that food waste is a problem and that we have the power to do something about it. And so I think it's one of those unique spaces where competition really isn't a thing. It's actually about growing the sector and growing the knowledge base and growing the opportunities for everybody to drive forward this huge opportunity to reduce food waste and make our world a better place to live in.
Wow. I don't even know what to say after that. that's such a great statement. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I look at it as it truly is a universal concept, and it applies no matter where you are in the world, whatever country you're in, the issue of food waste and food waste reduction, and then also hunger and the need for food. I mean, all the principles, all the foundations of what upcycling is, and I think are absolutely universal and can apply everywhere. So speaking of that, obviously, with a new certification process like this, it has to start somewhere. And let's just say baby steps, although these are big baby steps. Now that it's done, we talked to Alicia Hartley just recently about the next step in the process, which is to go into a beta mode of applying the certification and actually starting to bring products into that. And then it does a much broader rollout here in the U.S. Kind of with that in mind, is it something that you think would also could be adopted or could be applied in New Zealand?
Yes, definitely. There's no point reinventing the wheel here in New Zealand when, as you just said, upcycled foods are such a universal global concept, and our food supply chain is so global and interconnected as well. So I think, you know, when the timing is right, if the upcycled food certification were to be rolled out to New Zealand, I think it would be extremely well received, especially because that awareness is growing and growing, and people want to buy upcycled foods, and startups want to manufacture upcycled foods.
Yeah, I can see, as you say, there's a lot of benefit to not reinventing the wheel, but taking all the incredible work that was done through the process of developing the certification standard and then hopefully applying it on a more global scale when the time is right. So we've covered a lot of ground here, and I've learned so much about what you all are doing in New Zealand. And I got to be honest, I'm really in awe. I'm amazed at how forward and how advanced you all are with some of these processes. And I know I've learned a lot, and I'm hopeful that the listeners did as well. And, you know, since we've covered so much, if there was one key thing that you could leave the listeners with, that would be a thought or maybe an action item or an action step that they could apply right away from having listened to this interview today, or maybe something we haven't even touched on yet, what would that be?
Absolutely. And I'll say it, others will say it, I'm sure you've had it before on the podcast, but the power really is with the consumer. Go to your supermarket and ask for upcycled foods. The more that message is repeated, the more that retailers hear it, the more they'll respond. You really can vote with your wallet, and you can drive that movement and drive the momentum for upcycled foods. And we all collectively can do it together. I think the more we talk about it, and the more we share this information and enthusiasm and talk about the impact of upcycled foods and what we can achieve all together by driving that movement forward, it's, you know, that's where it really, what it really comes back to. So I think the power really does lie with every individual to ask for that opportunity to be able to buy upcycled foods.
fantastic. And Francesca, thank you so much for all you're doing. And I'm fascinated with all the research that you do. And we talked with Jonathan Deutsch not too long ago on one of our episodes. And he, you know, I know he loves working with you, and getting that perspective from, you know, another country is so valuable. And what we'll do on the on our show notes page for this particular episode, I think I can find, I think we have some links to a couple of the articles and some of the research work that you've done, and we'll have that available. And I look forward to staying in touch with you and just seeing what continues to happen. We'll have to check back in 2025, but certainly sooner than that as well. So once again, thank you so much for your time today. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much, Kevin, and really awesome work with raising awareness around upcycled foods and giving people the opportunity to hear from people all across the world about what's happening.
Well, that's going to wrap things up on this very first international episode of the Too Good to Waste podcast series. We hope you enjoyed it. I had a wonderful time interviewing Francesca and learned an awful lot about what they're doing in New Zealand. I got to say, I cannot wait for things to open up to where I can get down to New Zealand and really experience some of this firsthand. But I want to give Foodstuffs credit for their ambitious goal of zero food waste going to landfill by 2025. And more importantly, trying to find the highest value for any of their unused food in the process. So congrats on that, and I'm sure you're going to hit that goal. We'll keep an eye on that. Now, if you happen to enjoy this series, and I certainly hope you do, you can help us out tremendously by giving us a 5-star rating and following us on Instagram at TooGoodToWaste_podcast. If you've got an episode idea, by all means, send us an email. Go to our website, TooGoodToWastePodcast.com, and shoot us an email under the contact page. Special thanks going out to Sue Marshall for help with creative development, and to Amy Gilbert, our associate producer and resident upcycled food baker. We'd also like to thank, of course, our sponsors, Net Zero. You can find them at netzero.us, and the Upcycled Food Association at upcycledfood.org.
That's absolutely too good to waste.